Hello, hello, hello. Great day, everyone. Hey there. My name is Rhonda Y. Williams, and I am here with your Coffee with Rhonda Show Espresso Shot, where we stir up just a little bit of inspiration before our main brew. In today's segment, I invite you to choose happiness in a world that often feels chaotic and relentless. Here's the truth, leaders. You can't fake happiness. People know it and they feel it. And it will impact everything that you care about, including trust and productivity. So it's not about this fake perpetual smile, but it truly is about finding those moments of genuine happiness and caring. So what can you do? Here's three quick things for you. Celebrate, recognize and appreciate people for who they are and what they do for you every single day. Number two, give positive feedback generally. Sprinkle it all around like you would your favorite seasoning. And number three, be approachable, optimistic, and foster a culture of gratitude. That is your espresso shot. And we are going to dive in deep and break it all down today on the Coffee with Rhonda Show. Are you ready? Let's get ready to lead above the grind. Welcome. Great day, everyone. Super excited to have you all here with us. Welcome to another episode of the Coffee with Rhonda Show. We are your cup full of inspiration, revelation, and wit for today's savvy leader. And today we are going to dive in deep on, we are in season 9 and episode 108. So before we do all of that, a couple of quick housekeeping items. Please, if you have not already, like and share this video. I promise you there is something here that someone else will want to hear. If you have not already, you can subscribe to our YouTube channel. Super easy, coffeewithrhondashow.com. With all of that out of the way, then I want to just kind of move into things. So my name is Rhonda Y. Williams, and I'm your host for the show. And I am what I like to call an RSOL, or a recovering stressed out leader. As a former hospital and healthcare executive, I've had my share of stress, and I now advocate that leaders foster and really strengthen a culture that values well-being and caring for others. So there's many, many ways for us to get our work done, and why not create a culture where everyone wants to be. You can learn more about the work that I do in the world at atgleadership.com. Now, today in my cup, I'm using this cup because I'm planning another trip back to Anguilla with one of my dear friends, and we were talking about it yesterday. So I've got Anguilla on my mind, where we'll go spend a couple of weeks in January. So that's me. And in my cup, I just have regular coffee with a little bit of pumpkin spice as my holiday tradition. That's me. So let me introduce my co-host, and then we will introduce our special guest. Good evening, Marae.
Good morning to you. I hope you can hear me. This is Marae, the greatness engineer, all the way from Perth in Australia. For me, is late at night. So it's evening, and just to let you know again who I am, the greatness engineer. I've been, you know, focusing on making sure people understand they have this greatness and help them to really step into the greatness. And I'm focusing on women in male-dominated environment to help them to be more visible and step into those positions of power and influence. So today I'm drinking peach tea. New tea for me. So I will enjoy.
Yum. Sounds great, Marae. Thank you so much. Thank you for staying up late with us as always over there in Perth, Australia. We so appreciate you. And I want to tell you a little bit about our special guest. Okay, so Dr. Ilya Gogoris is president of the Happiness Center, an organization of world-leading experts in the field of positive psychology dedicated to creating personal success and happiness. Dr. Ilya is the author of the number one best-selling Amazon book, Seven Paths to Lasting Happiness, which has been translated in 5 languages. He also co-authored a highly acclaimed book, 7 Keys to Navigating a Crisis, a practical guide to emotionally dealing with pandemics and other disasters. His message is featured in respected publications and media around the world. And with his positive psychology background, he has helped thousands of people find happiness. I'm incredibly excited to welcome you to our coffee table, Dr. Ilya. Welcome.
I'm incredibly grateful to be here first thing in the morning. So awesome. Great to see your smiling face.
Yes, wow. Thank you.
I gotta ask you, what does the Y stand for?
Yvette.
Yvette, beautiful.
Very yeah, nice. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for asking. So, do you have your cup, and would you mind telling us what's in it?
Well, I don't have a cup. I have. It's a little bit more generic.
Oh, got it. Like Starbucks Frappuccino.
That's definitely, right. Yes, I do.
That definitely works too. So, we're gonna dive in and have a great conversation. The first thing I want to do is I want to say good morning to Mom. Is out there watching. Hey, Mom. Good morning, all. Waiting with a large hot black cherry lemon tea. Wow, that sounds amazing. Finding happiness in any challenge should be a great show. Absolutely, Mom. And Mindy's out there as well. Hey, Mindy, great to see you out there. Good morning. Are you drinking something? And if so, what do you have in your cup? So if you're out there, don't forget to tell us where you are, where you're watching from, and what's in your cup. So we're going to dive in today, and we're going to start with a quote. And I ask all of our guests to share an opening quote. We're going to share that. And then, Dr. Ilya, I'm going to ask you to talk to us about why this quote. And I think it's going to be a great segue and opening into our discussion. I'll read it for those of you that are listening later on audio format in just a second. The quote says, happiness is a choice. It's also a skill set that everyone can learn. So, a little about that. I've heard happiness called a lot of things. I don't typically heard it referred to as a skill set. So I'm excited to hear about that.
I think sometimes if you tell people happiness is a choice, they might look at you and say, well, maybe that comes easy for you, but it doesn't come easy for me. So although it's a nice quote, happiness is a choice, I think we need to add some more information to make it much more inclusive, I think, for people that maybe struggle with depression, struggle with anxiety. Happiness for me has always come easy. I was like a happy kid growing up. Like people have known for decades, man, Ilya has always been this way, like since the get-go. And even though I've lived through tragedies and difficulties in life and all losses, like everybody else, right? I've always been able to maintain a very positive attitude, thinking that things eventually work out. I believe in people. I love people. I love deeply and profoundly. And you know, of course, what goes around comes around. When you love big, people love you big back. So I'm the happiness doctor, and I'm grateful to be on your show.
Thank you. Thank you. I love that. The happiness doctor. That's going to be my next question for you, because I'm wondering, how does one become a happiness doctor? So Mindy said, I did ask Mindy what she had in her cup. She says, I've got cold brew with caramel coconut milk creamer. It's going to be a great show. Also, that sounds delicious, Mindy. And Regina's out there. Hey, sis, good morning. Coming in from San Antonio, Texas. I've got coffee in my cup. Fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about that, Dr. Ilya. How does one become a happiness doctor? Where do I get that degree?
Yeah. So, you know, my background was I have a PhD in clinical psychology, and I spent the first half of my career in private practice, full practice, morning, noon, and night. I was working like a maniac, loved it. Until I got burned out. It took me 18 years, but I finally got burned out and I transitioned over to the corporate side, you know, and began to work with senior leaders and C-suite. This is like a long time ago, though, before all the studies, the Forbes studies and the Harvard studies that linked happy employees being, you know, more productive and more innovative and better teammates and all that stuff that ultimately, So people used to say, like, a lot of the C-suite, Dr. Ilya, we really like you. You're a nice guy. You don't know what the hell you're talking about. Because, like, I pay these people to go to work, and I get to work. And I was just trying to say, look, if we can create a culture of happy employees, in essence, first of all, you know what most people don't even measure when it comes to that is that happy employees tend to be physically healthier. So there's a, like, physically, meaning that they show up at work. They don't lose work because they're not physically well. So their savings just from that alone. I mean, nobody even actually measures that. But more importantly, happy employees are, I think, more creative. They're more innovative. I think they're better teammates. And people say, well, why do you say that? Because they practice self-care, and because their own batteries are full, they have enough within themselves to actually help another teammate that's struggling, perhaps. And ultimately, they're more productive, which in the end it creates this wonderful culture within the company. They're great ambassadors, meaning that happy employees tend to recruit, not because they're recruiters, but they tend to recruit really good talent because, like, you should come and work in this company. I love working here. So they bring good talent. So there's less turnover, right? There's greater retention. All those things add to the bottom line. To me, when I used to say it like 18 years ago, it was common sense. I just didn't have this, you know, the studies to back me up. It was just me. And people were like, you don't know what you, I'm glad you're happy. And I'm glad you want our employees to be happy. You don't know nothing. I could use other words that they used. So the happiness doctor really came when I actually decided to write a book in 2015 when it came out. And, you know, it was my first book. Both of these books that I wrote, I didn't write them as a doctor or PhD. I wrote them from my heart. And if you're 18 years old and you're about to venture and start college or start with your life, you're going to get something out of it. If you're 85, you're going to get something out of it. It's very practical. The books are very practical. This is how you do it. Not theory, not academic stuff that only three people read them, you know, plain talk. And I just decided, like, at the end of every, this is what people have said to me. You know, when you write your very first book, you're kind of nervous because it was very personal and you don't know if people are going to boo you upstage or whatever, or they're going to embrace it. Well, they did. And I, you know, it would have been nice. It was like a top 10 Amazon. When it hit number one, it kind of, like, not freaked me out, but I was like, wow. But the feedback I kept getting is like, Dr. Ilya, it's not like you wrote something so unique that Aristotle didn't say 2,500 years ago. And I'm Greek. I know Aristotle. But what we love about it, at the end of every chapter, you have a couple of points for the reader to ponder, you know, just to think about. And then a couple of questions to answer. But then the most important part is the take action, which is, you want to practice forgiveness or self-forgiveness? This is how you do it. And the take action stuff came from me seeing thousands of patients when I was a clinical psychologist in my practice, and really what they taught me. Like, this is, you want to practice self-forgiveness, which to me is the ultimate act of self-compassion. You can't be happy if you don't forgive yourself. There's no way.
Wow. There's a lot for us to unpack there. I want to dive into one area specifically. Hey, Estelle, thanks for joining. She said, good morning, Rhonda, coming from Camden, South Carolina, and a friend sharing platform.
I love that, Estelle. House.
I have a cup of respect. Awesome. Thank you so much for being here, Estelle. I love that. And you talked about a lot, but I want to talk to you about this journey. Sure. Because Murray, you've been in the work, and I don't know if it's been this way in the areas that you have been working in, but what I've seen is this, almost this circle happening in terms of employee and how we look at employees and our responsibility towards them as leaders. So we started with employee happiness, and then they said, no, it's not our jobs to make our employees happy. That's not it. It's, we want them to be satisfied. And then we said, okay. Oh, great. Okay. So we're going to focus on employee satisfaction. And then we said, oh, satisfaction. Well, we don't really care if our employees are satisfied. That's not what it's all about. We want them to be engaged.
Engagement. I was just going to say
that. Exactly. Now it's employee engagement, right? But there's a shift happening. And I see very distinctly a shift transitioning back to where there are studies now coming out to say, no. We need to go back to happiness, because happy employees matter. There is a very direct impact on the workplace when your employees are happy. So let me go to Murray first to see if she's seen this also. And then Dr. Ilya, I'm going to come to you and talk about what is my responsibility as a leader to make my employees happy. So, Mireille?
Yeah, I think it's quite an interesting thing. And you always come across those, manager who really focus on the KPI and all kind of things, not really thinking about, the happiness of the employee. And I've experienced that when I was working in Malaysia about 10 years ago. We had we have a team, and that's when I actually resigned myself, is, we had so many, KPIs. People were not happy. We were working hard, but not really recognized. And then in one week, four people resigned. And I still remember when I went to my manager to really address, that. It's like, oh, I'm too busy. I can't talk. I said, okay, you're not going to have to talk long because I'm leaving. And then that's when it's like, okay, let's go and talk about it. I said, but it's too late. You have to address that. And you could see the tendency, people leaving. Obviously, there was something happening that you should have, really discussed with people and understand what was the problem. So people were not happy. And it actually backfired on, on the company. So it's really important that we really focus on our, as manager, as leader, focus on our team and people that we are leading, understanding, what makes them happy, what do they like, and what are the shortcomings, how can we help them, fill those gaps and really create an environment where they feel safe and can talk about, anything that is, that is bothering them, so that they can feel really, able to continue and work in a positive, in a positive environment. And we can, Dr. Happiness was talking about, being physically, when you're happy, you're also physically, okay. And that's really what's happening, is that, when you don't like what you do, you suddenly become sick, you start missing, finding, way not to go to the office. And then as a result, you also become sick. So it affects everything. So your physical, your mental, and it is important that we focus on that as leaders.
I do. And Dr. Ilya, she makes a really great point about everything being interconnected, right? It's not this work over here. It's all connected. But I also hear leaders say, it's not my responsibility to, really make people happy, and they could have unhappy lives, and that's not my problem. And how do you help leaders with that?
First, I wrote an article a few years ago for Arianna Huffington's, I don't know if it was the HuffPost or the Thrive Global, anyway, her platform, which was, the title was Happy Leaders Equals Happy Teams. Mm-hmm. Meaning, if you don't make your own personal happiness a priority, it's going to show. There's a direct link. First of all, happy people, forget the word leaders, although we can keep that in the back of our heads. When people are happy, they're magnetic. People have the it factor, if you will. People are attracted to them. Mm-hmm. They're drawn to them. They want to be close to them. So as a leader, if you show up a certain way, and I'm not talking about superficial happiness or pleasure. I'm talking about authentic, deep down inside, profound, I'm good with myself. Like, I like myself. Not in a narcissistic way, you know what I mean, but I'm like, I take care of myself. That gives permission to your direct reports, or even, other men say, wow, look at the boss. I want to drink what he's drinking, basically, whatever Kool-Aid he's drinking. Like, they're attracted to that. So for me, listen, we all have a sphere of influence. Yeah. Sometimes it's 3 people in media, right? Sometimes it's 3 million. Whatever the sphere of influence is, there comes a certain responsibility with it. So I truly believe that when the happiest version of ourselves walks around, it makes this world a better place.
So that's really, really powerful, because I think there is something freeing in what you just said for leaders. And what I heard is, leaders, this isn't a heavy, heavy cross to bear, right? This isn't a heavy, this is you showing up in a way that is magnetic, that is attractive, that is kind, that is caring. And that alone will give you a measure of ripple effect. This is good. Really, really good. All right. Let me say good morning to Dr. Pat. Hey, Dr. Pat Baxter. Great to see you. She was a guest on the show, I think, last season. Good morning. I agree that happiness ties to how safe one feels, stating their truth and their view. That is so true. Thank you for sharing that. And Janice is out there dialing in on LinkedIn. Janice says, good morning from Seattle, Washington. Yes, happiness is an important something to keep close to your heart and share with others. And then we also have Omater. I hope I pronounced that properly, Mercy. When you care for your team and coworkers, you as a leader will achieve your business and your business will grow. A caring leader will enjoy a healthy working environment and relationship. It seems like it's not rocket science, but it feels like rocket science, right?
Well, I think it's hard to achieve, though. I mean, we all know this stuff, but it's not, it doesn't happen as often as we would like it to be.
Well, yeah, we'll talk about that because you and I were talking about that a bit before we went on the air, the fact that we know some of this stuff, but is it really happening?
Mm-hmm. But sometimes, I mean, because it's also about energy. So it's also what kind of energy do we have around us as well? So obviously start with us. But we also need to have, you know, the right energy around us to really, you know, pump up and bring out this positive energy that we need to, you know, for ourselves. And that can be, you know, it's really both ways. It's, you know, obviously start with you, but if you have in front of you the wrong energy, you know, it doesn't come back. So it can actually be very difficult.
Dr. Elia?
Yeah, what I was going to say about that is, let's say you practice all the self-care in the world, physically, emotionally, mentally, spiritually, you express gratitude on a daily basis, you've forgiven yourself, you live your purpose, all the things that we know about, right? But then you surround yourself with toxic people and have a toxic, which is exactly, I promise you, no matter what you do on your own, if you surround yourself with toxicity, that's going to rob you of your health and happiness. And I speak to you as someone that does not have toxic relationships in his life. And people say, are you serious? I'm like, no, I am serious. Well, say, how do you do that? I'm like, it's actually simple. And they're like, no, it isn't. What if it's a member of your family? I'm like, it's the same thing. It applies to everybody. But it starts with the way that we show up in every relationship, whether it's personal or professional. So Rhonda, for example, if I treat you with love, kindness, and respect, I have every right to expect that you will treat me with love, kindness, and respect. And if you don't, you and I are going to have a conversation. Mm-hmm. But I can't be a jerk to you and then expect you to be loving, kind, and respectful to me. So it always starts how we show up in our relationship. I got to do my part. I have to come with love, kindness, and respect towards you. But then as a result of that, I'm like, so if we're out of alignment with somebody, that's the first question that I asked him. I said, overall, do I treat you with love, kindness, and respect? Yes or no? Yeah, you do. Okay, well, guess what? I expect the same in return. Isn't that fair? And if you don't do that, then you almost lose the privilege of being in a relationship with me until you're ready to do it. I want to be in a relationship with you, but I'm not going to put up with your toxicity because I don't deserve it. And Roz, go ahead. If you want to say something, I see Roz.
Oh no, she's very expressive.
This was the amen corner, honey. Keep talking, because I'm wrong.
But isn't that fair, though? It's not fair. I just have to show up a certain way with people, and I try to do that, starting from my wife of 33 years, my kids, grandkids, everybody. People that I love big, I show up big, and I don't expect people to show up exactly the same way, but they do need to be loving, kind, and respectful in return. That's a non-negotiable. So if you can't do that, then we're not going to have a relationship until you get to that point where you can do it. And if you never get to that point, guess what? We're never going to have a relationship. We might have a very superficial, like, especially if it's a family member, how's the weather? And, you know, that's it. But you're not going to have a deep, profound, and intimate relationship with me where I can be vulnerable and you can be vulnerable and we can be open with one another if you're not loving, kind, and respectful, period.
This is really good. So we've got people thinking about this. Joe is out there. Hey, good morning, Joe. Always great to see you. She said, love this topic. Modeling positivity and happiness will help those team players learn how to flip challenges into opportunities because it's contagious. And Dr. Pat said, I have cut toxic people from my life a few times, and I think I've extended my life by doing that.
Amen.
That is amazing. I absolutely love that. But is there a way that you do? So here's what I'm going to ask now, because typically that sometimes that toxic person is a person of authority or someone that you are a bit hesitant to approach, right? It could be that leader who's just not kind. Dr. Elia, how would I have that conversation with someone in authority?
No, I'm glad you asked that. And it isn't just someone with authority. It could be some. It could be your mother-in-law. It could be somebody very intimate, even more intimate than someone in authority, for example. I teach people how to practice HOT communication, H-O-T, which stands for honest, open, and transparent. HOT communication, especially in the important communications. Now, there's two ways to do that. One of them is, Rhonda, let me be brutally honest with you and take a 2x4 and hit you over the head in the name of HOT communication, H-O-T. That's one way to do it. I don't recommend it. The other way to do it, of course, is to practice HOT communication from a place of love. And I don't use the word love lightly. I'm talking about, because if it's in the best interest of that person and if it's in the best interest of our relationship, it's almost mandatory to practice HOT communication. Mm. So there's two ways we can give feedback, you know. Let me give you some constructive criticism. No, there's nothing constructive about criticizing anybody. That's an oxymoron. There's nothing constructive about criticizing somebody. Nobody ever got better if they got criticized enough. Let me give you some feedback. Since you asked me, or you asked me for feedback, let me give, but I'm going to do it from a place of love. But I will be honest, open, and transparent. People really, really appreciate that. In my coaching practice, people say, how do you talk that way? Nobody talks that way. I'm like, but is it not the truth? It is the truth. It's refreshing, but most people don't talk like you do. You go straight to the point. I'm like, life is too short. We're all going to die soon. So let's do it. And let's live our best lives now.
I love that.
But isn't it true though? Yeah. And think about how beautiful life can be if we are loving, kind, and respectful with one another. There's nothing we cannot resolve. Like, as a clinical psychologist, I did thousands of hours for marriage counseling back in the day. I can't even tell you. I mean, thousands of hours, like animosity, toxicity, and so on. And I'm like, at the end of your life, what will you remember? That you beat somebody to a pulp and you got your point and your ego was fed and you won, quote unquote, you didn't win anything. So for me, I shift from like, not so much what is our mindset, but where is our heart set? I don't even know if that's a word, but you know, not mindset is important, obviously, positive mindset, but heart set, this is what it's all about. Mm-hmm. And when we come from a heart set place and give feedback, people not only receive it, they're extremely grateful for it. And they will thank you for years to come. Thank you for having the courage to have that hot conversation with me. And you were so honest. And I knew what you were saying was true. When I share stuff with people, I'm like, listen, you don't have to believe what I'm saying. If you're a spiritual person, after we get off the call or after we meet, pray about it. And ask God, is it true or is he full of crap? If he says full of crap, I'm full of crap. But if the message, and I say, God, it could be your higher power, it could be your intuition, it could be whatever you get answers from, that still small voice inside, ask. Mm-hmm. Is this true? I think deep down inside, most of us, when we hear truth, we recognize it.
Oh, right? My goodness. I want to come to you for a second, Roz, but I want to read Omater's, and she said, yes, I was pronouncing that correctly. So thank you for responding to me. She wrote a comment that says, we need positive energy. It helps us navigate around such toxic people. As leaders, you also need to equip yourself with emotional intelligence. Something else Dr. Elia and I was talking about pre-show, and then really saying that, you know, we need to consider that positive in the workplace. And it's almost like you need to be that thing that you expect to see in the workplace, right? So mom says, I agree, genuinely happy people definitely wind up being charismatic. They're more magnetic. And Dr. Pat said, constructive criticism is so
nasty. That's a good one.
A great term. Okay, I always say on the Coffee with Rhonda show, we should have our own dictionary of terms that we come up with. Dr. Pat, we definitely need to add stealth nastiness.
I'm going to drink to Dr. Pat.
Yes, I love it. But let me come to you, Roz, because you jumped in on this conversation and you can respond to anything that you've heard so far.
Well, this is so timely because I just came out of a toxic conversation. And I often have to have these with the families as a caregiver. There's some things that they expect us to do that we don't do. Clean baseboards, wash windows.
Look at Ross's face.
Okay, so we don't do deep cleaning. And I have to explain to them, if we're doing all this cleaning, then we're not paying attention to what? The client. We're not paying attention to any signs or symptoms of decline. If we're bent over cleaning the floor or cleaning the baseboard or outside washing the windows, okay, I outsource for that. We don't do that, you know. So those type of things, sweeping the front porch. No, we only take care of the inside. And I told them we only mandated to do 15% cleaning.
So Roz, here's my question for you. Dr. Ilya talked about hot communication, right? And you probably wish this show was before that conversation, right? Because that open, honest, open, and transparent conversation, right? But here's the but, and I want everyone to hear this, not just honest, open, and transparent, like I'm going to just, what's the my least favorite phrase in the world? Oh, I'm going to keep it 100. I hate that term. But don't use it with me, please, because I'm liable to get triggered. But from a place of caring and heart, having that honest, open and conversation to reset expectations, but from a place of heart. Is this helpful, Roz?
Yes, because I had to reestablish the boundaries of what we do and what we don't do. And then part of it was, okay, you have family members that want to tell us what to do, but you haven't given them power of attorney or authority. Mm-hmm. And once I get that, then I'll listen to them. But until then, they don't have any right to be inside of my DNA and in our inner circle of care, our care circle.
Right.
They're not a part.
Wow. So this conversation is really timely. So yes. Dr. Ilya, you talked about these toxic conversations with people that you can have those. And it could be anyone, right? Your mother-in-law, your boss, or whatever. What role do we have to play in terms of our ownership? Because what I will hear people say is, yeah, but I can't because it's my boss, or I can't say that to my mother-in-law, or I have to avoid this conversation.
First of all, I'm not a person that believes in I can't. I won't. I don't feel like doing it, but there's no I can't. I can't means I have no choice. And I believe that, you know, the greatest gift we have is the freedom to choose for ourselves how we act or react. Or, you know, or choose to respond back. So I don't believe in I can't. I choose not to, out of fear, out of, you know, whatever. The book about the pandemic that I co-wrote was the first book to market in the entire world. It came out in May of 2020 in the midst of the pandemic. One of the things that we discovered is that human beings, when facing challenges, fall into four categories. This is fascinating, actually. Four categories or four personality types in responding to crises or challenges. The first one is the victim. And the victim is, why is this happening to me? You know, poor me, victim. And in the pandemic, there was a lot of that. I'm like, it's not happening to you only. 8 billion people are in it. It's not just you. I'm kind of being facetious, but okay, so that's number one. The second one is the critic. The critic will criticize, get angry, frustrated, vent, spew venom, whatever. Like, that's all they do. They blame the boss. They blame their spouse. They blame the government. They blame. They're all about blaming. Number three, we like to call the bystander, but really is the fearful one. The mindful, mind you, a decent person, but somebody who's so overwhelmed by changes taking place in their lives, they're so overwhelmed that they're frozen, basically like the deer with the headlights look. And they just don't do anything because they're so fearful. And then we get to the fourth type, which we like to call the navigator, which is the whole premise of my talks in the book and so on. And the navigator, of course, does things very, very differently. But before we get to what navigators do, it's all four of those personality types exist within each human being. It's not like, well, Dr. Ely is the navigator and you're the critic. No, we all have it. That's my psychology hat. So the key to life is we're not perfect human beings. From time to time, we're going to get frustrated. If you want to be the critic, do it for half an hour, get it out of your system, feel your feels, get out of your system, and then pivot and become a navigator. If you're feeling sorry for yourself, in March of 2020, in 1 week, all my speaking engagements all over the world got canceled. Email after email, my entire work in 1 week disappeared. Couldn't travel, couldn't do anything. So did I feel like a victim? Initially, I'm like, oh my gosh, what am I going to do? You know, I'm supposed to speak in Barcelona in October. I did it, but it was through Zoom. It wasn't exactly the same. Anyway, but you know, I felt it. But then I'm like, okay, so I can't speak. I can't travel. What can I do? And that's how the book came about. I had no plans to write a book. It came about because I thought, I don't control what's happening out there. What do I control? I have more time than I've had in many, many years now. What can I do? And that's how the book came about. So navigators pivot, and they navigate, and they do that by practicing great self-care. And I want to say one thing about self-care. Self-care basically is like giving the world the best of you instead of what's left of you. Think about that. When you practice self-care, you give the world the best of you, not what's left of you when you're exhausted and tired and burned out.
I love that. So it's our responsibility to step into that role of self-care. But I think what I hear you saying is it's also our responsibility to recognize which crisis type we are functioning in that moment.
And everybody gets it. When I've shared those four, Rhonda, people go, I know exactly what I do first.
Yeah,
I had my own son when I told him, he's in the early 20s, he says, Dad, I think I do victim. What is it? Critic, navigator, third. He said, I'm not very fearful. I'm like, that's good, my boy. The goal in life is to eventually move the navigator to be your number one response. To his credit, because he got it immediately. I didn't even have, the minute I finished explaining those four personality types, he knew it. Most people know. If you think about when you get challenged by something, when there's adversity in your life, and I claim that we're all graduates from the University of Adversity, all of us. And the older you get, the higher your degree, because you face more adversity in life. So we are all graduates from the University of Adversity. And when it comes to—
What was the third one called again?
Well, I call it the bystander or the fearful one.
Oh, the bystander.
Yeah. And Rhonda, what I wanted to tell you about all three of them, the victim, the critic, the bystander, what all three have in common, none of them take personal responsibility for their lives. It's either poor me, or I blame somebody else, or I'm frozen in fear. So neither of those three move the needle forward to some kind of resolution, right? To some kind of positive outcome. Where the navigator, that's all they think about. These two shall pass. They have a big picture perspective. They practice gratitude. And not only gratitude when things are going well, because that's easy to do. Try coming from the University of Adversity in the midst of adversity and finding gratitude in that. And one of the greatest quotes comes from Nelson Mandela, who said that in life, he's one of my heroes. He said, in life, either you win or you learn. In other words, there's no losing as long as you're learning something. And think about who said that, someone who was in prison for 27 years. Think about who said that. So as long as we're learning something, all four of us have some success in life on this, you know. But I can promise you the greatest lessons we've learned came from our adversities. Not from what we can say, oh, I did this and did that. Okay, fine. The more painful the lesson, the greater the lesson, at least in my personal life. When things have not worked out, and if you go into victim mode initially, do it for half an hour. Don't do it for 6 months and be depressed for 6 months. I'm not saying, you know, it's normal to feel like a victim from time to time. It's normal to get upset. I just don't want to be upset at the government for the next 6 years. I hurt myself. The government could care less. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. No, that's really, really powerful, because I want to just invite people out there. So Dr. Pat said, taking personal responsibility is key to rebalancing ourselves. Love that. I want to invite everyone out there to think about yourself and think about the way in which you navigate crisis through the lens of these four personality types, right? So victim, critic, bystander, and navigator, which is your default?
Exactly. And
that level of awareness allows you to just begin recognizing it, so that you can choose in 30 minutes to shift gears. So I can always tell where people, how they operate, because let's say something happens to you at work and it was terrible and shouldn't have happened and it was unfair. A week later, 2 weeks later, the very first thing that you talk about when you see me is that thing. And I'm like, are we still talking about that? Like, yep. Okay, I get it. It was awful. And truly, but if you anchor yourself in the past to that personality type, then you have no choice but to keep living in it. And then as a result, you get what you get, right? So, wow. So Murray, let me just get your voice into the conversation and you can comment on anything that you've heard so far.
Yeah, I like what was shared, you know, those four personality and I really know that, you know, we can go from one level to another. And I think as we age and I'm talking about myself, I tend to navigate between the bystander and the navigators. I quit, you know, being a victim, I quit blaming people. And I always want to focus on what, you know, I can control. And sometimes it can be fearful. So I kind of, you know, look around, stop and do nothing. And then, you know, go to the next step, which is trying to navigate, find a solution that I can handle myself. So that's really, but when I was young, it was, you know, victim, critics and all over the place. But with age, obviously, it has it's a bit more refined.
Yeah,
if I can express myself that way.
Yeah, thank you, Murray. Roz, what about you? Mm-hmm. Given those four types, what are you thinking about your response? And I'll share mine as well. The four types again are victim, critic, bystander, and navigator.
I have to be the navigator, particularly in caregiving.
Yeah,
you know, both hands on the steering wheel. The captain's hat is on, and I have to navigate between the families and the person receiving care, the person receiving care, and their healthcare providers, the person receiving the care, and just day-to-day stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, how they eat, how they dress, you know, exercising, keeping them clean, just the basic things that we navigate. And a lot of times we take for granted. That, you know,
yeah,
you know, we can go to the bathroom on our own. Most of my clients can't. I have to navigate that.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about safety, my body mechanics. So it's a whole lot that I'm navigating.
Yeah.
So I know that I'm a navigator.
Yeah. No, that's really powerful. I think, you know, when I think about the work that I do, and just me as a being, right, as a person, I tend to go to navigator as my default because I'm always looking for solutions. I don't really, I almost don't care what happened or why, like, where are we going from here? How are we moving forward? However, I also recognize I can be a critic, right? I can look at things through a critical lens and get on a bit of my high horse sometimes about things and why is this and why aren't people and that sort of thing. But I think the key, Dr. Elia, for me is what you said. I don't allow myself to stay there very long. I allow myself to be there for the moment, and then I allow myself to sort of shift back into my default. Dr. Elia?
Yeah, and the critic isn't, that's the key, Rhonda. I mean, I remember when the pandemic first happened, I had some criticism towards the previous administration. And this is not a political statement either. I thought they mishandled it in a lot of ways. So, but even if you say, well, like, that's righteous anger or whatever, I don't want to stay stuck there for 6 months. Right. I can express that I disagree with the way that they're handling it. I don't believe in fear. I'm not a fear-based person at all. But I'm not going to stay there. I'm going to navigate through it. So mm-hmm. The fact that you criticize, sometimes your criticisms are accurate. They're spot on. But you yourself, for your own health, you don't want to stay stuck there in just like, like it's basically it's energy.
Right. Stay stuck there.
We move the energy through.
Yeah.
Because a navigator's energy is an energy of expansion and an energy of growth. You know, Winston Churchill in his, you know, sardonic and British humor, you know, back in the day said, they asked him, what's the difference between an optimist and a pessimist? Which to me, an optimist is a navigator and vice versa. He said, optimists find solutions to every problem. Pessimists find problems in every solution. It's kind of funny.
I love that.
People like that. We know people, we have clients, we have patients like that. We tell them, have you thought about doing this? No, that's not going to work. Have you thought about maybe do that? No, I've thought about it. Have you done? No matter what solution we offer, they always find a problem with it. We know people like that, right? And they drive you crazy.
We do know people like that. And I think this is a good time. We have 15 minutes remaining. I want to be sure that we walk through your happiness process, because you talk about this a lot, and it is the importance of actually doing something, right? And yeah. So how do we, wherever we are on the spectrum, or where we are finding ourselves in the workplace that's, you know, excessive workload, and I'm really stressed and frustrated. So I'm going to put this on the screen, and I'm going to ask you to talk us through this process, please.
Sure. All right. And we have talked about some of these things, right? I mean, we've already talked about most of these things, I think, in a lot of ways. The practice, the daily self-care, I created a personal health assessment. It's 20 questions that looks at your physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual well-being, which I give to my clients before I even see them for the first time. And I can, and Rhonda, I can make that available to you and to your audience through PDF. When we get off the call, awesome. I'll send that to you, and you can share with your audience. It's been shared and used by physicians, nurses throughout the world, in hospitals, in companies. And I'm gladly to, it takes about 2 or 3 minutes to do, honestly. Just so you know, I take my own personal health assessment on the first of every month. I created it, but I take it for myself to see, basically it's like seeing your pulse. How am I doing this month? What areas am I doing well? So kind of like pat yourself on the back. And what areas could I use some adjustments, right? So the self-care is key. That's the foundation of everything. And then, of course, we move into gratitude. And I know we've talked about this already. For, you know, Gandhi said that forgiveness is the attribute of the strong. I say that forgiveness equals freedom, you know? Mm. And because we don't even have to tell the other person we forgave them. It's for us. If we can't tell them, that's great. But then self-forgiveness is the ultimate act of self-compassion. When I was a clinical psychologist, a lot of my practice, I had addicts, drug addicts, you know, all kinds of addictions. I mean, that was my dissertation, was on Alcoholics Anonymous. So I kind of know the 12 steps and addictions. So as you know, when you're addicted to something, you destroy relationships left and right, including both personal and professional, right?
Right.
So when people sober up and they kind of go through the steps and eventually start making amends and so on, and they do make amends, we would go through that. And they're now, they're sober for years to go. I would have an exit interview with them. And I would say, do you think your spouse or significant has forgiven you, or even your ex-spouse? How about your kids? How about your boss? How about this? We go through the list. Have you forgiven yourself? Guess what the answer was to that?
No.
No. Or the best answer I've ever received is, I'm working on it. So I taught people like the importance of self-forgiveness. There's no greater act of self-compassion than to forgive yourself. And fortunately for me, that comes easy. I maybe because I'm Greek, I don't feel a lot of guilt. Like, yeah, you know what? I made a mistake. It's not the end of the world. Let's move on. And that's what navigators do. Let's learn from my mistake, and then let's move on. Like Nelson Mandela said, the hot communication we've talked about, the toxic mm-hmm. relationships again, the heart set instead of a positive mindset is important, but I think where your heart set is really what makes you happy though. The one thing that's missing from this formula, I know I sent this to you last night, the one thing that's missing from it has to do with the word flexibility and adaptability. Navigators, that's a huge part of their success actually, tend to be very flexible and adaptable. And we use the analogy of the oak tree and the palm tree. So the oak tree is this massive, huge tree, like it's 100 feet high, majestic, beautiful, has been there for a long time. But if there's enough rain in a hurricane, if there's enough saturation on the ground and enough wind, guess what happens to oak trees? They come crashing down on people, cars, homes. It happens all the time, right? Palm trees, on the other hand, at the peak of the storm, and now what's the thing about the storms of life? Not, at the peak of the storm, palm trees will bend, sometimes parallel to the ground. But when the storm passes, like in every storm does pass and the sun comes out, guess what happens to palm trees? They rise up. Now, and they're actually stronger because the roots had to dig deep underground and hold on for dear life during the storm. So be a palm tree, don't be an oak tree. And people said, okay, Dr. Ilya, that's a cute story. I'll remember that. But in human form, what does an oak tree look or sound like? Like when you say, well, don't be an oak tree, adultery is this. Well, this is who I am. That's how I've been for the last 40 years. I'm not going to change now. And we see that for individuals and organizations. My goal, and I say this publicly and to all three of you, is, and I have gray hair, so I'm older than all of you. The older I get, the more flexible I want to be. Not stuck in my ways. I want to learn from my kids' generation. I want to learn from younger people. More flexible, not less flexible. More open to learn new things from people that, you know, I have some wisdom because I've lived here for a long time, but there are people, there are innovative people, things are coming up from younger generations that are amazing. And I'm like, wow, to only to be young again, to be like you, I want to learn from them. And in order to do that, like the old saying says, a mind is like a parachute, right? It only works when it's open. A parachute doesn't work if it's closed. A mind is like a parachute. More open-minded to learn from people from different cultures. We love to travel. I want to learn from different cultures. I want to experience different food. I told my wife, I said, honey, when I die, I don't want anything left in the tank. Empty. Like, you know, orange. You know the orange light when you're like, yeah. I don't want to have anything left in the tank. I want to live my life to the fullest. My parents died young. I don't know how long I'm going to live, and I'm going to live life to the fullest. Happy, present, showing up for a relationship with a big heart and love and helping people.
Wow.
Navigators ultimately, the last thing, and that wasn't on the, is they're kind. Navigators, because their batteries are full, they're kind. They express kindness indeed, not just words, although words and compliments are nice, but indeed they help. Am I my brother's keeper? I had people actually say that to me on Zoom during the pandemic when I was calling people to be kind. What am I, my brother's keeper? I'm like, no, you're not your brother's keeper. You're right. You're your mother's keeper and your sister's keeper and your friend's keeper and the homeless person down the street. You're their keeper too, because in the end, we're all brothers and sisters. That's the mind of, and the heart set of a navigator. We are all connected, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wow.
That is.
Wow. Love it. So Janice says, I have seen persons who do not honestly forgive themselves suffer greatly and for a longer length of time. So Janice, it's like that quote, I think, where they say that not forgiving someone is like taking a poison pill and expecting them to die, right? So I think that is one thing that is really important for us to understand, that by not forgiving, you're hurting you. Right? That is something where you're suffering. So, oh my gosh, it's 9:53. We're going to have to wrap up here. So let's do our coffee shot and let's make sure that we are on time. Hold up your frappuccino.
There you go.
Right there. It's all gone. Wait, you got to hold it up for the shot.
Sorry.
That's okay. There we go. Smile. Got it. Okay, so we're gonna do our wrap up segment now, and I'll let Roz and Marae react to the steps that you had there on the screen as we do our wrap up. This segment, everyone, and if you're out there listening, this segment is called the What's in Your Cup. So I'd love to know what we put in your cup today, metaphorically speaking, during this conversation. What is it that you're taking away that we have poured in your cup today? And then we'll ask Dr. Elia to summarize what he'd like people to take away as well. And we'll come back and start our wrap up right after this. All right. I can't believe a full hour has gone. That hour flew by. But as I said, this is the What's in Your Cup segment. So, Roz, let's start with you. What have we put in your cup today?
Well, when Dr. I don't know if I'm pronouncing his last name right. Dr. G. Gorgeous.
Dr. G.
Gorgeous. Oh, I like it.
You can just say Dr. G.
Dr. G. When Dr. G said, graduates of adversity university, greatest lessons come from adversity. That was, I'm going to have to put that on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you credit one time. And then Rhonda, when you said, don't anchor yourself in the past.
Yes.
This whole conversation that you all are giving me today on this, When I tell you, I have come up against mountains and mountains and mountains in the last week, and to hear this, it lets me know that I have something greater on the other side.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
So because of this, and I always say this, every time we have this show, it's always timely. It's always, I'm able to apply it immediately. Mm-hmm. Everything that we get from this show. I mean, I never walk away the same.
Yeah.
I never walk away the same. Thank you, Rhonda.
Yeah. Thank you, Roz. Thank That's you, Rhonda. Really powerful. And it's why we keep coming back and doing this show, right? So, Marae, what about you? What's in your cup?
So I'm going to add to what Rose said. And one thing that I really like is, you know, as self-care, as a navigator, is giving the world the best of you and not what's left of you. Yes. And I think that's a very important thing that I've picked up today.
Yeah.
And also the four types where, you know, just understanding that those are not static, status. We can navigate from one to another, but the important thing is to not stay in those negative critics and blaming stage, and you know, always come back to being a navigator. And I think that's very powerful.
Yeah, thank you so much, Marae. Dr. Elia, what would you hope that people take away from this conversation today?
I would say life is too short. Do not procrastinate your happiness. Forget all the wins. Because most people live in the future, when I'm in the right relationship, when I have a family, when my kids grow up, when I retire, when. Forget all the wins. There are no guarantees about anything. That's not the great thing about the pandemic, but that's one of the things that came out of it. Like, there are no guarantees about tomorrow. So live your best life now. Let your light come out and shine. Really, when I talked about the toxic relationships, I mean it. Get rid of toxic relationships in your life.
Mm-hmm.
Show up with love, kindness, and respect, and expect the same in return, and your life will be so much happier. I promise you that. Mm-hmm. And I just want to express my gratitude to you, Rhonda. What an incredible show. And I love just your energy, your smile, your thoughtfulness, the way that you ask the questions is beautiful. Because I've done hundreds and hundreds of podcasts. Sometimes you just do them and you're like, okay, well, that was good. And other times it's a pleasure. Like, this full hour has flown by. It's a pleasure because of you, Rhonda. And so thank you for that.
Thank you.
The way you handle it, it's the way you do it. It's beautiful. And it's effortless. It's like you and I have known each other forever, like best friends, and we're just talking over coffee. And we just met today, which is a remarkable thing. So thank you.
Thank you so much for that. I so appreciate it. And I appreciate you. And it's been such a pleasure having you on the show. We had a comment that just came through. Omatira said, I should not procrastinate my happiness. That is for me. Most times we load ourselves up with something and we procrastinate on our own self-care. Absolutely. So, Dr. Elia, how can people learn more about the work or connect with you?
LinkedIn, The Happiness Doctor, Elia Grigoris, or through my website is DrEliaGrigoris.com, DR and then name.com. So that's the best way to get a hold of me. But Rhonda, thank you again. I know it was early morning here and I've got a busy day, but my day's already done. I'm already happy no matter what happens the rest of the day. The fact that I was on your show.
That's awesome.
Everything else is icing on the cake, whatever happens the rest of the day.
Well, Mom has a parting comment, because I know you've got to run because you've got an appointment at the top of the hour. Mom said, if it weren't for my strong faith, I would put Dr. Happiness in my cup and carry him with me everywhere I go.
With you.
Feel free to pop off if you need to go, Dr. Elia. I so appreciate it. We're just going to wrap up here with my last drop. And I want to say to everyone, thank you so much for tuning into this incredible show. Dr. Elia, we have loved every minute of our conversation with
you. I have too. I wish we could go on and on, but I do have a client that I have to jump off. Ladies, thank you so much for your time and thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you. And we're getting ready to wrap up, folks. I want to do my last drop for all of you today. In the pursuit of happiness, remember, it's not just a destination. This is a journey that we share with those around us. Let your happiness be the light that ignites smiles and inspires greatness in others at home, in your workplace, in your life, in the grocery store. Your happiness can be the light that inspires greatness in others. And so with that, we're going to end this incredible show today. And I see one more comment. Omatir said, I am happy now because we care for others so much. I am being fed now. Thank you for putting this together. I'm so glad you had an opportunity to watch this show. Murray and Roz, stay tuned for just a minute. You all are amazing. Thanks to everyone out there. And we will see you back here next week. Same time, same station. Oh, no, not next week. Enjoy Thanksgiving. We have the week off next week here in the States. It is the Thanksgiving holidays. So we will see you the following week. And we'll be back here for another show. We'll probably do a replay on Thanksgiving. So we'll be here if you want to tune in. But until then, we'll see you back here in 2 weeks live next week on the replay for another episode of the Coffee with Rhonda show. Until then, take good care, everybody.